Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Dark Fiber Africa. I'm joined by DFA Chief Strategy Officer Vino Govender now. Vino, good to see you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Duncan. Nice chatting to you again.
Now, we're going to be talking today about COVID-19 and the lockdown, but we're also going to have a look forward to when all of this madness is over and how the fiber industry and the telecom sector more broadly will have changed as a result. But first, Vino, let's talk about the immediate past. South Africa went into a hard lockdown at the end of March. Telecoms has always been deemed as an essential service, even when we were under level 5 of the lockdown. But in practice, how has the lockdown affected you guys at DFA?
So, we can look at it from, how it impacted our business, firstly, from the patient's perspective, but also the impact that it's had on market. I think as an organization, being in the tech space, what it forced us to do is actually invest and test our disaster and business continuity plans to the fullest. I don't think there's been another event that's really allowed any organization to kind of do that.
Yes.
And I think, we've come out very well on it. Some key things to note, the network operations center is at the heart of an operator, and we managed to move our network operations guys to move out of the NOC facility and work remotely from home. And in spite of doing that, we still achieved network availability and uptime north of 99.99. So availability was significantly up with a remote NOC environment. We weren't actually doing any builds in the first phases of lockdown, just doing optical work. And we still managed to pre-provision the network and deliver some optical build links with our teams on the ground and, with the contractors on the ground. And just coordinating all that from a remote perspective worked fairly well. The other key thing in the business of ours, we predominantly build, roll out, manage and assure network. But just the rest of our employee base, we managed to get keep the business running at high levels of productivity. And one of the key things it gave us an opportunity to do is actually also accelerate our digital transformation agenda within the business. When you look at operators across the globe, the drive to a better customer experience being led through areas of digitalization, automation is highly dependent on data. And we've come through COVID-19, the period, the immediate past, but using the time to get a lot of the employees whose activity kind of dropped down in their work roles, but focus them or redeploy them in data cleanup activities. We had just prior to this made investments in data quality software, data management software, and we achieved a lot in terms of getting our data cleaned up, made a lot of progress in that, data management, data quality, and also enabling some of the use cases for data-driven use cases within the business to drive efficiency in our business. Because Duncan, as an infrastructure at scale, you're driven by efficiency and economy of scale that enables you to absorb pricing with efficient cost structures.
Mm-hmm.
So internally, those are the key highlights, and obviously we got our employees doing a lot of learning. Fortunately, a lot of the global institutes and locally, Harvard, Stanford. The local universities as well made a lot of content available, Gibbs UCT, available free of charge. So we got a lot of our employees to use the time to kind of do some self-paced learning, which is to the benefit of our organization, because one of the key pillars of our organization is that we also drive a learning organization, a learning culture, and we believe that by exposing our employees to those types of topics, it'll drive innovation within the organization. So that's internally within the business.
Right? Mm-hmm. You're saying your digital transformation strategy was dramatically accelerated as a result of the lockdown.
100%. In fact, one of our major projects, which was order management and service orchestration, mm-hmm. It's a significant project for us because it drives order management, automation of order management, so from order to cash and provisioning. We just last week completed that project, and it moved now into a production environment, which is a significant achievement for us as a business. And also, it, you know, in terms of the value we can deliver to the customer, not just from a ease of doing business perspective. You know, it's just that moving or migrating them towards a slicker, smoother, zero-touch experience with the business. And that was one of the key foundations of it. So that's internally with the business. What we've seen customer-facing as well, COVID-19 impact has, and we have to respond to it, and I'll tell you how, has had a significant impact, firstly on data traffic, consumer and business, through, you know, consumption of content services, now that people are at home, and also, you know, the entire work from home side. Mm-hmm. And that also has businesses also to increase capacity, you know, in their environment. So, as they, you know, enabled more, digital, services on in the business environments and to support remote workers. So we saw a significant increase in bandwidth. Now we service a number of segments. We service the MNO segment, the first FNO segment, fixed network operators, the wireless network operator segments, and the enterprise ISP type segment, right? And we've seen a phenomenal increase in traffic, and we've responded to that by you know, increasing the amount of data throughput without at the same price point. So enabling, you know, the guys to build headroom in the network for the excess traffic, but also consider knowing that, you know, it's going to be a bit tough times. We made a concession not to increase and do that at zero charge. So pay for your existing service, but get the extra, enjoy the benefit of better bandwidth to cater for the extra demand, because it's a socially responsible right thing to do as well. You know, lots of consumer ISPs there supporting people that are working from home, mm-hmm. Kids getting access to education, the wireless internet service providers, you know, they could quickly deploy network, because, you know, building fiber, it requires civil work, and you wouldn't want to do that during a level 5, you don't disrupt services. So the wireless guys saw an increase in demand to cope for connected to the demands from consumer and business environment. And we allowed the backhaul traffic to increase at no charge. We also didn't implement any price increases during the period. So I mean, that's what we've seen on our side. The MNOs, on the other hand, got access to extra spectrum. So having access to spectrum means they didn't necessarily have to roll out new sites for coverage, because the increased spectrum would have enabled them to increase the capacity on data on the radio access network. But we prepared, and we still are. And we, now that we moved into level zone 3, actively building out those new site requirements for MNOs. Now, as you know, Vodacom moving into 5G, mm-hmm. and other network operators moving to that in future.
So what sort of impact? I just wanted to ask what sort of impact you actually saw on traffic, your backhaul traffic flowing across your network. What sort of percentage increase did you see through the various stages?
I think overall at the peak, that traffic, I'm just giving you a ballpark number, but I think traffic would have increased significantly, I would say comfortably over 50%.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Especially on the WIF side and the ISP backbone, if you know backbone networks.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you mentioned that
what's important to note is normally, you know, when you see traffic patterns, it peaks at a certain time in the day.
Yes.
What you saw is the peak was like a constant peak. Mm-hmm. It's not a phenomenon just in South Africa. I mean, I've been looking at some of the global trends. TIM, for example, in Italy, hit the global traffic forecast in the annual. So the annual traffic headroom, mm-hmm. they hit in 1 week. So just to give you an example of how, and it hasn't dropped, by the way.
Yeah, incredible. Even as people return to work. So do you think we're going to hit, and even when this whole thing is over, the traffic levels will be at a new permanent high? new higher high, if I can call it that.
Yeah, I think the baseline has shifted, and it would. I mean, let's consider the number of students that are still studying from home. Let's consider the number of schools that have now extended e-learning platforms. And you know, with people being, you know, you've seen you know, zero-rated servers being introduced as well, you know, in a socially responsible manner, access to testing and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So and also, you know, people consumption patterns on content have also shifted. So yeah, we'd expect that to remain significant high. And you know, whether everybody was going to move back to their offices going forward, it's still, you know, it's still a view. The from the information that I've been seeing, we do not in the next 12 to 18 months, we still expect you know, a significant portion of the workforce working remotely, and that's going to drive you know, the traffic. The other thing, Duncan, and I've been seeing this you know, consumption patterns, online shopping. I mean, is lifted up significantly. Retailers, Pick and Pay, Shoprite, Woolworths as an example. I just saw recently that Runway has been doing phenomenally well. They just attracted another over $100 million worth of investment in their platform because just of the shift of from physical to online shopping channels. And that's another way in which the data, the demand of data traffic is moving as well. Mm-hmm.
So what's the situation at DFA? How many of your employees are back at work now?
So Duncan, what we've done is when you look at guidelines, right? Obviously, you cannot bring all your employees back into work.
Yeah.
You know, 30% in. You know, you got to understand that the workspace also becomes, I would say, in inverted commas, diluted because you've got to maintain distance and dedicated workspaces. You can't hot desk because you want to know that one person's been at a dedicated space for track and trace purposes. So we've really you know, looked at all the guidance. We've got a sound policy around managing this from a Sheikh perspective: tunnel screening, sanitizing, fogging, defogging, masks. Protect PPE, done all that. But however, we still have the view that, you know, prevention is better than cure. And so we still, our employees can work from home. We've been encouraging them to work from home. We've also, you know, relooked at how we provision, make data available for them. So, you know, mobile data for those who don't have fiber. Not everyone has access to fiber infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So we've enabled our employees with access to data, mobile data. Mm-hmm. And it's working well. We've increased the number of licenses on the VPN. So we've done everything, you know, possible. We encourage them to work from home. Rather do that. Prevention is better than cure. But at the same time, for those who need to come into the business, we've taken a very, I would say, comprehensive, detailed view from a Sheikh perspective and compliance. So we've installed spray tunnels, like I mentioned, sanitizers, masks. And at the same time, for those who are working at home, enabling them with the tools that they need to be digitally productive. Duncan, something that I want to also mention is that we've also encouraged our employees to also maintain their healthy lifestyle while working from home. And we feel that's important because if you don't do that, you know, people are going to burn out. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just this morning, our CEO, we have company town hall, I believe, every week. And this morning, we had like about 300 employees that dialed in on Teams for an exco CEO talk, you know, from the exco and the CEO. And we encourage them, you know, make sure that you take your best. Take your body breaks. Know when to do a hard switch off. You know, CIO provides daily tips on in terms of how to use technology. So, you know, in a way, we also building our digital capability within the workforce, but at the same time, we're also balancing that they live a healthy lifestyle as well, because it becomes so easy to be consumed sitting in your chair for 8 hours. And we don't believe that's a sustainable way, you know, and it's not going to drive employee engagement in the long term.
I think you also don't realize actually traveling to meetings to go and see people, the actual act of getting in your car and driving somewhere is a form of relaxation during the day. When you roll out of bed and you're working from home, you get in front of your computer, you start your meetings from 7 a.m., you don't go anywhere, you're not moving, you're sedentary, you might stop briefly around lunchtime to eat, but then you carry on with the Teams and the Zoom calls and clearing your mail, and then the next thing you know, it's the end of the day and you've hardly moved at all, whereas normally you'd be on the go all the time. I see it in my job as well. I'm sitting in front of my PC all day and it's really frustrating because I enjoy going out there and meeting people, and it's actually, you've got to deliberately focus on standing up, moving away from your computer and going to do something that isn't work-related.
100%, and I resonate with that. I think you and I had a chat about some time ago when I didn't meet you. I mean, I stay in the West then. It sometimes takes me an hour to get to DFA in Centurion.
Yes.
But I don't feel that hour, because that hour every morning was my time. It was my time to catch up on calls, you know, go through an e-book, audiobook, you know, maybe phone a friend. And, you know, I've got family overseas, so, you know, I try and get them. When I phone them out in Australia, it's like the evening. So you kind of miss that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the point is, you know, we got to manage our time, you know, to maintain, also to, you know, to ensure that we're also productive. Because if you don't do it, I mean, there's many studies that show that how screen time, I mean, if you don't have a hard switch off, you know, you know, and being in front of your screen, you're not, if you're going to switch off your screen at 7, 8 o'clock in the evening, you're really not going to have a proper sleep and rest.
Because
of the way light waves work. So, and there's studies that are that. So, yeah, but I guess the point is that, you know, our employee engagement is a critical pillar of our strategy. We believe that engaged employees, happy employees will drive a more productive organization, as well as deliver more exemplary customer experience. And so, yeah, we encourage that. And we, you know, we also encourage them to find resources. We point on to them to resources where they can learn more. You know, we had an initiative driven out of our chief of sales, where he's also started ticked off a kind of information learning session every Friday. And the response that we get in terms of the attendees from employers across the organization at every level, finding out what other areas of the organization do, what's their role, how does my role fit into their role. I have a question around how does planning work, how does feasibility work, you know, what's layer one, layer two, and we present these things, and we build a much more tightly knitted organization where everybody knows how their role aligns to the achieving the strategy of the organization.
How have you found remote working as a company? Do you find people are just as productive working from home?
So what we've seen is, so let's start, right? Because we went through a phase, like we went to phase level 5, level 4, and level 3. We went to a phase, right? And I'm sure many companies will attest to it. Work from home, and then it was, you know, calendar bookings and calendar meetings after meetings. And then, so people are busy, and there's a difference between busy and being productive. So what we had to do is, we had to, you know, put in, you know, what's online, and I would call it, what's the online etiquette? What's the remote working etiquette, as an example? There's simple things that we are about, but just reinforcing it. Like, for example, you know, a meeting, you should have clear agenda, objectives, outcomes for a meeting. And, you know, not everybody, you don't have to be attend a meeting because you're invited for a meeting. You've got to gauge, hey, what's my input that's required from me? Is that input best provided through actually sitting through a meeting, or providing input on a document, or on a scope document or whatever, but provide the input in some other form. So what we found is that from that early stages where it was just about booking meetings, online meetings, everyone on Teams, we've reached a stage, you know, we've gradually moved to where the right people were in the right meetings for the right reason, driving a specific outcome-driven agenda, if I could put it that way. And so we've seen, in terms of what we do have seen, however, is the response rate is much quicker with people working from home. And I don't know whether it's psychological that, hey, I must show up. But, and I've seen it, well, sometimes you send a request and, you know, you wait for a mail or whatever, and then you walk over to someone's business. But now the response rates are much more quicker. And the other thing that we find, which has added a lot of value in the business, is, you know, with online working, such as using Teams, you also use other online resources. So, for example, SharePoint for document management. I mean, people, and this is, I've seen in many organizations, people, you know, normally, yeah, I'll use SharePoint, I'll use the shared drive, but I'll keep stuff on my PC. Mm. But now, you know, we've, you know, kind of forced people to use this shared space for collaboration. And what it has done is, you know, kind of resulted in richer output and quicker output, because it's like, yeah, guys, here's the document there, do your edits, do your input, whatever it is. But that collaborative way of work it now, and it also gives people the flexibility to do it. I don't need to be in the meeting for us to discuss the document. When I have the time, I'll get onto it, I'll look at my reviews, I'll make my edits and whatever. So in that way, we've seen productivity increase. So, and not just internally within the business, also externally with our clients out there as well. Mm. So,
interesting.
It's in responsiveness and productivity and the rate of increasing the learning organization.
So once the whole COVID situation is behind us, hopefully it's not going to be too long, and we're in a world where we don't have any lockdowns or any restrictions. How do you see the way DFA works and functions will have changed? Will you have changed your approach to office versus home-based work?
So prior to COVID-19, so let me give you some background, Duncan. Prior to COVID-19, we had already kicked off, as part of our forward-looking view. Our strategy is always evolving, right? Because there's a lot of things that emerges along the way and we have to retweak. So what we started looking at is, which markets and segments we play in, what are the value propositions we deliver to this market, which is essentially our strategy. And it's a forward-looking view. And for us to fulfill that, we're going to need a targeted operating model along our value chain. And our value chain is we plan, we sell, productize, plan, build, maintain, operate, and assure network. It's very simple. And the targeted operating model is driven by people, process, and systems, right? An organizational structure that underpins this when it comes to the people. So to your question, do we see a lot of the post COVID-19? Do we see still remote working playing a significant role? Yes, it would, because there are certain levels of roles defined by the job scope that requires an employee to be present at the organization. So a very simple example, a splicer has to be out there in the field. We'll be dealing with someone that's maintaining a system in our private cloud environment, as an example. They can work remotely, but where there are, patches to be installed on servers and stuff that require, and as a broader project, so not remote patch deployment, but, where there's physical work to kind of be done, it will. So they'll swing in and around remote when you need remote. So there's going to be a job world, a mix of remote with non-remote work. Obviously, there are some areas where guys need access to a lot of data and connectivity to work because of the systems that they work on. And you know, in areas where they don't currently have access to connectivity of that capacity, because not all the areas, you know, of the country are fully covered or even within the munis adequately. And, you know, they would most probably come, they would come to work as well. Or, you know, you just have to manage it based on, you know, the outputs of the day, you know. So we, the way we manage our employees is not going to be whether you're going to be bottom line, whether you're going to be at the office or not. It's about the, your goals. The objectives that you've got to achieve as an individual and as a team. And we leave that up to the different BUs, business unit areas, the management and senior and lower levels to manage that. Because ultimately we an outcomes kind of driven organization.
So let's talk big picture then, rather than at a DFA level specifically. Post the pandemic, what is the telecommunication? How will the telecommunications industry in South Africa have changed? And does it present any specific market opportunities for DFA?
So I'll give you the view you know, that we kind of see, right? And let's talk about it in you know, from a segment perspective, I'd rather look at it from a segment perspective and maybe touch on some key segments, right? Mm-hmm. The mobile network operator segment, I mean, that segment's, you know, what we're seeing is, you know, for players in that segment, right? The Vodacoms, the MTNs, the mobile network operators, their challenge or their opportunity is to address the growing need, demand for data and data capacity. But at the same time, manage the capex and opex associated with it, because they, you know, at the end of the day, they also measured on EBITDA and margin and growth, and that's so they're going to have to do that. They'll do that through capacity acquisition of spectrum and also through densification where possible, you know, where appropriate. At the same time, you know, if you look at the way networks worked, you know. 2G, we just connected people, you know. 3G was connecting them to data, right? 2.5G, 3 was connecting people to data, connecting them into the internet. 3G to 4G was just enhancing that connection to the internet and actually connecting them to services, to richer services. And then 5G is about connecting things, right? So that's the way things have evolved. And you see the mobile network operators now are on the advent of deploying those 5G networks and connecting those things.
Yes.
And that, so the trick here, the balance for them is how do they do it in a manner that's efficient from a capex and opex perspective, and they maintain the and grow their EBITDA margins. And for us as an infrastructure provider, that presents a significant opportunity, provided that we kind of build and lease and the infrastructure to them in a manner that incentivizes them not to do it on their own. So having said that, I think in the and when I look at the MNOs, the metro and rural the markets, in the metro markets there's definitely an opportunity, especially when it comes on 5G densification. And also there's still a number of sites that's still to be connected onto fiber, and you need that to get the backhaul. I think the other opportunity is to develop and pursue and develop a model, mm-hmm. and that model is going to be most probably a partnership model to address the capacity requirements in the non-urban areas. Now, some of the trends that we see, and you'll see them, they're out there, they're in the public domain. You are seeing, you know, mobile network operators, you know, looking at alternatives. Partnering with tower providers, looking at you know, off-grid radio access network in the rural areas, looking at grant sharing, you know, bundling a transmission in it. So those are models that we are going to have to firm up through partnerships to address that need for the mobile network area. because yes, we see an opportunity there. And those services, those the demand for e-education services will be even more enhanced in those areas. And that's where the opportunity I see. On the fixed network operator side, definitely. I'm sure Duncan, you also chat to the internet service providers, the consumer ISPs, and the demand for fiber to the home.
Yeah.
And the traffic increase has been significant. Mm-hmm. So obviously we as DFA provide backbone, backhaul to an extent, some of the frontal for those networks. And as the market grows, there's significant opportunity for DFA to address the infrastructure requirements for that market. The other, because we know the areas anyway. The other areas, the market segment is the wireless network operators.
Yes.
I'm not calling them WISPs. There's a number of wireless network operators. Fiber has a place where there's density. In areas where there isn't density of demand, that's where the wireless network operators play. But COVID-19 has also, accelerated the demand for the segment, services from the segment. So, wireless guys have seen increase in capacity, was it not, and to an extent, an increase in demand from the number of customers. So, this is the market that will continue to serve from a backhaul perspective, but look at more scalable models for them to ramp up the backhaul from capacity based to full layer one infrastructure for some of them. So those are key segments that we look at. There's the ISP segment as well. These are the pure play ISPs that don't really own infrastructure. They just buy layer one and layer two. And just buy layer two services. We have expanded our product set to include broadband as well as quality of service. So best evidence, quality of service, fiber based. We do provide a level of wireless microwave best effort layer 2 access. And that's a market that we will support, as they grow up. I do see a consolidation happening in that environment. So obviously, you're going to see a market consolidation will lead to concentration of demand for layer 2 services, and that's fine because what we've done, the way we've done our pricing model, is very much volume based and term based pricing for layer 2 services. So it gives those market players the ability to achieve efficiency through scale achieved through consolidation. So that's the other market segment that we look at. And the other segment that we also, playing as well, is the, I would call them the cloud provider, market or the, over the top provider market. And these largely deal with, the cloud platform providers. So, we provide backhaul between their points of distribution or their own data centers. But, with 5G coming in, Duncan, I'm sure you're aware of it, 5G is a critical enabler for the edge computing use cases. So now that you've got 5G, and now that you've got cloud providers sitting, but very much essentially, but not close to the edge, there's an opportunity to also provide edge computing co-location infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But that requires a partnership between the cloud computing platform providers, the MNOs as well, because 5G is intrinsic in edge compute use cases. So, but it opens up an opportunity and brings that opportunity forward that we will be definitely looking at in the edge colo space.
Well, it sounds like the industries actually could end up emerging out of this COVID-19 pandemic crisis stronger than it went into it, which would be quite amazing. One of the few sectors, I think, that might actually end up doing that. But, Vino, it's always good to chat to you. Thanks so much for the insights on what the impact that COVID-19 is having and will continue to have on the telecommunications industry. Vino Govender is, of course, Chief Strategy Officer at Dark Fiber Africa. Thanks so much for talking to Tech Central.
Thanks, Duncan.